We're doing the laws of Shabbos, and this time we're going to start from scratch, go back to the beginning, Bezlach and go in order, and try to cover as best as we can the laws of Shabbos. So the first concept we learn about is the importance of honoring Shabbos. So we know the Navi told us, V'karata l'Shabbat onik, we have to make Shabbos into a pleasurable day. Shabbos is called Mikra Kodesh, a day that's designated as a holy day. And so we have to wear clean clothing. In most communities, it's acceptable that people wear a white shirt for Shabbos. We have to prepare good food and drink in honor of Shabbos. Chazal told us, Kol ha-me'anigeta Shabbat, whoever makes Shabbos into a pleasurable day, so then notanin lo nachalam li mitzarim, he will ultimately get no limits on his portion. It says a person will be saved from shiabud malchuyot, from suffering at the hands of the nations, and this is meritorious for becoming wealthy. So Chazal told us, on the one hand, make Shabbos into a special day. On the other hand, Chazal said, even if you did something small in honor of Shabbos, that's enough. And we have a third quote where Rabbi Akiva said, Asei Shabbatcha chol, you should rather make your Shabbos in like a weekday, in the sense that you will eat the regular sandwich you eat on a weekday. Ve'al titztech lebiriyot, but don't come to a point where you have to rely on other people. So the first concept is, if you can afford it, so then the Gemara says, buy good food for Shabbos. In their day, the good food was big fish and big garlic and a special type of kugel. Something made of tered. I don't know exactly what that is. So that was their delicacy, you know. That was our, like our lamb chops or steak or whatever, venison, I don't know. That's if a person can afford it. So then they should buy good meat and good wine in honor of Shabbos, every person according to their budget. Then you have someone who has a very, very limited budget. So Chazal said, even if you made kasa de harsina, even if you made this cheap fish that they used to fry in oil, and that's the one dish you made in honor of Shabbos, everything else was your regular weekday food, that's okay. You made something in honor of Shabbos. So it could be you ate rice and you ate regular angel's bread and you ate and you drank water, but you made one little dish in honor of Shabbos, that's called you honored Shabbos. Yes, that's the bare minimum. Then you have a situation where a person doesn't have, he's living off of tzedakah. The poor guy has nothing to eat. Even if he's not living off tzedakah, he has the bare minimum, the tour. Asked his father the rush. He says, I don't have a penny to spend on Shabbos. Should I fast one day so that I'll have the food I would have eaten that day in honor of Shabbos? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to honor Shabbos? How far am I supposed to go? So there, on the one hand, if a person can skip a meal and save that meal in honor of Shabbos, Chazal wanted you to do that. But a person has to see what works for them. And Chazal said, if you're in such dire straits, so better don't invest in the Shabbos than invest in the Shabbos and have to come to charity. But that's only if there's no other option. Sometimes a person can skimp on the other days and save up for Shabbos so that he can have something in honor of Shabbos, and that's what Chazal wanted us to do. Ezra made an institution that people would launder their clothing on Thursday in honor of Shabbos. So the idea is, A, we should have clean clothing for Shabbos. So that's why we launder our clothing. B, he said, launder your clothing on Thursday so you'll be available to do the cooking and preparations for Shabbos. You can't spend Friday out by the lake cleaning your clothing because then you won't have the time necessary to prepare the house and the food for Shabbos. We have a custom to prepare special bread for Shabbos. The idea is, on the one level, people would very often buy the bread of the baker, and there we're relying on leniencies. It was often a non-Jewish baker. So by baking their own bread, they were having more kosher bread, so to speak. Bread that was on a higher level. On the other hand, there's also the concept that Chazal say that just like we take off a piece of the bread for the Kohen, so too the human being is like that challah. The human being is chaloso shel olam. The concept that when you take dough, it's just bread. But you could take, you have a mitzvah to take off a piece of that dough and give it to the kohen, and then it becomes truma. It's the holy part of the bread. So now my bread, which was just flour and water, became holy because I took off a segment and I said, that's holy for the kohen. By the same token, you had all of creation, which was mundane. And then out of the earth, Hashem made something different, the human being, the man. And then his wife gave him to eat from the forbidden fruit, and suddenly the challah of the world was decreed it would die. And so the human being was called the challah of the world. And so being that Chava is held accountable for bringing down the challah of the world, so on Friday, which was the day in which Adam and Chava ate from the forbidden fruit, there is a custom that the women make dough and take off the challah. They take off that section and they do the mitzvah of challah on Friday. Some people used to have a custom of eating a special type of dish that had dough on top, dough on bottom, and meat in the middle, and that was to commemorate the man that had a layer of dew on top and a layer of dew on bottom, and the man was in the middle. So that was a custom in some cities. Yes? We don't have that custom. We don't. What they call in modern Hebrew pashtida isn't that. We don't have two layers, one on top, one on bottom, a crust on top, a crust on bottom, and meat in the middle. Sfardim do that. Our Sfardim will still do that, yeah.
And in terms of challah, they would take off a lot of things. You have shikha, leket, peya, truma, maser.
Right, but leket, shikha, and peya aren't kadosh. Truma. So challah is a form of truma.
And how is the woman doing the tikkun opposed to saying maser, truma?
You're right. We would have thought that truma and maser are the same. You're right. Maybe because conceptually, Hashem, it says Hashem took the earth and mixed it like dough to make the human being.
That's not literal.
Okay. You're saying, why is this different than any other truma? Maybe because this is more of a finished product. It's ready to be eaten. Truma you take from the grains. Maybe this is more in the woman's role. She's not out in the field harvesting and threshing. And she is in the kitchen making the bread.
You don't take maser when you're threshing. You take maser once you finish.
Say there, but that's still, the guy is doing that. I'm saying challah is more than woman's mitzvah. She... Okay, now we start Simon Reish Mem Gimel. And Reish Mem Gimel discusses the halachos of a business. When you have a business and you want to let a non-Jew run that business on Shabbos. So let's take an example. You have your car mechanic, and over your mechanic shop it says Cohen's Automobile Supplies or Cohen's Body Shop. Okay, well, Mr. Cohen, if your body shop is open on Shabbos, so even though you have a non-Jewish worker and you make a deal with him, he works on Shabbos, etc., you have a problem. So in Chazal's day, it broke down into two types of businesses. There were businesses where the norm was that you had a partnership, what's called a sharecropper. Meaning, let's say you bought a property, you bought a field, the farmer couldn't afford to buy the field, so you told the farmer, okay, I'll buy the field as an investment. You take care of the field, and you take one-fifth of the produce, one-quarter of the produce, you will take a certain percentage as your payment. So now the farmer has an interest to work that field well because he knows that the final product, he gets 25% of the final product. So now he wants to make it work. Okay? So everyone knows that when you own a field, you're not paying the worker by the day. The way you set up a deal around the field is that you divide up the profits. No, you wouldn't hire a farmer and pay him by the hour or by the day. So if people see the non-Jewish farmer working your field on Shabbos, no one thinks you told him to work that field on Shabbos. No one thinks you hired him for that day to work. What do people think? Oh, you have a deal with the non-Jewish farmer. You have a deal that he gets a certain percentage and he can work it whenever he wants, however he wants, because it's in his interest to work that field well to make more of the profit. Right? So the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah tells us like this. Being that the norm when it comes to fields is that you give it to a sharecropper, you give it to someone to work, and they do whatever work they want, whenever they want, even if all around the fields it says, Yosef Chaim's fields, Yosef Chaim's oranges, okay? It says it everywhere, but everyone sees the non-Jewish worker working on Shabbos. No one thinks Yosef Chaim told him to work on Shabbos. Everyone knows that that's not the way you set up a field. You do not; it's not profitable. No one would hire a worker and tell him, I'll pay you today for your work in the field. It's not the way fields are run. So that's permissible. Because it's not only the truth is you didn't tell him to work on Shabbos, it also doesn't look like you told him to work on Shabbos, and no one thinks you told him to work on Shabbos. But what happens if we have Binny's fine mikvah? Binny owns a bathhouse, and whoever wants to come use the bathhouse, so they pay, you know, you put in your $5 to use the bathhouse, you get to use the spa, you get to use the bathhouse, so everyone knows it's Binny's bathhouse. What happens if the non-Jew says, I want to rent your bathhouse, Binny, I will rent it from you, and let me run it the way I want, I'll keep it open on Shabbos. The problem is, even though technically he wants to leave it open on Shabbos and it's his shop, but it doesn't seem that way to people. Everyone knows that a bathhouse is very profitable, and you don't usually tell a person, I'll give you percentages. You hire a worker, you pay him by the hour, because you're supposed to make much more money on a bathhouse. So if people see the non-Jewish worker in the bathhouse on Shabbos, what are they thinking? Oh, you decided to keep your shop open on Shabbos. So even if technically you made a deal with the non-Jew, you told him, I'll give you 50% of the profits, just like we did with the field. Let's say you made the same type of deal, and so he can keep it open whenever he wants, he can keep it closed whenever he wants, it is still prohibited, because the understanding, what people think, is that you hired him to work on Shabbos. So that's our starting point. Next problem. I'm not allowed to hire someone to do work for me on Shabbos. Meaning, I'm not allowed to tell a person, I'll pay you X and you work for me on Shabbos. Right? That's obvious. What would be if I hire a non-Jew and I tell him, look, you run the bathhouse all year, I'll pay you X amount per year and you run it all year long. But who makes all the profit? I make all the profit. So then I'm not allowed to let him keep the bathhouse open over Shabbos. Even though you'll say, but he's not making money, he's not really my messenger on Shabbos, I paid him a global rate for the whole year. Right, but he has no reason to keep it open on Shabbos except for that he's working for you. You're making a profit over your store being open on Shabbos. You can't say, well, I'm paying a global rate, so it's okay. Not true, because you're paying a global rate, and that works on certain things, but it doesn't work on having your store open on Shabbos. That could work if, let's say, you want to hire a non-Jew to cater your event. So you tell him, I'll pay you for your work of Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. That's called Havlah. I'm not paying him for Shabbos alone. So if the work that he does on Shabbos is something that's permissible, it's not that he's running my bathhouse for me, it's that he's serving food on Shabbos for me. So I could serve the food, but it helps me that he's serving food. So then I could pay him by doing Havlah. I'm not paying him specifically for Shabbos, I'm paying him for a number of days, and Shabbos is one of them. That's how you rent a hotel room. How do you stay in a hotel room? Why, you're paying for Shabbos? How do you rent an apartment? You're paying for Shabbos. You're not paying for the weekdays and you get Shabbos as a freebie. When you rent an apartment, you're paying for every day, including Shabbos. Right, but you're paying by the month. You're not paying by the day. So you don't have to, so that's called Havla. Even a Jew I'm allowed to hire that way to work for me on Shabbos, if what's being done is an act that's permissible on Shabbos. But here, what?
What it means exactly?
To live in a house is permissible. How do you collect rent over Shabbos? How do you collect rent in a hotel room? So the idea is I'm collecting rent for a more global time. I'm not collecting only for Shabbos. I'm collecting for Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. But if I'm hiring him to do a job which I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos, he's going to run my bathhouse and make money for me. So then it doesn't help that it's Bavla. Okay, so we started. We got our intro to hiring a non-Jew on Shabbos.